call the board back in session. We'll go back to regular business. We got three under advisement. Gentlemen?
Yeah, one you haven't reviewed yet, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, the Sulco application.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well.
11368.
Oh.
Sorry.
Thank you.
I gave him 5 minutes. It's all good. I thought I had him 5 minutes.
I gave him four.
I gave him four here.
So
next application. Is it on? We're tape on?
Yeah.
Okay. Case number 11368. The application. Oh, you got to come back in session. Sorry.
I now call the board back in session. Now you're ready, sir.
Oh, my.
We're now going to consider case number 11368, Sulco Partnership, DBA Verizon Wireless. Site is located 1,500 feet northwest of Route 24, also known as John J. Williams Highway, on the northeasterly side of PATH, I'm assuming that's how you pronounce it, lane, 0.4 mile southwest of Road 297, Mount Joy Road, being identified on the tax rolls as tax map ID District 234, map 29, parcel number 30, requesting a special use exception to place a communications tower. Gentlemen, this application, more specifically, is for that purpose. They're proposing a 145-foot-tall telecommunication tower with a 5-foot-tall lightning rod above. You were provided with a copy of their surveys, construction drawings. I believe you were not provided with two documents. One has just been provided to, or both have just been provided to the board members. I'm going to introduce them and take down a copy of the documents to Mr. Sharp. First one is basically excerpts from the online Sussex County Comprehensive Zoning Ordinance, Chapter 115, where it references commercial communication towers and antennas. The second is a document from DBM Engineering PC in reference to the tower. There's a cover letter and some engineering documentation that relate to the tower, and therefore the documents are now introduced into the record.
Thank you. Okay, good evening, sir.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman. John Tracy from Young, Conway, Stargett, and Taylor here on behalf of the applicant. I note Mr. Rickard moved us to the end of the agenda. He clearly knew that my bracket had been busted, so it didn't matter what was going on in the game this evening. Shows you for taking a flyer on two number four seeds. With me are three individuals. My intention is for only one to have to testify, but the others will be available in case there's any questions from the board. Mr. Tiskoulis is our civil engineer. Mr. Peterson is our RF engineer. Ms. Manchel is the representative of the site acquisition folks for Verizon Wireless. I guess I should have them all come up to Mr. Sharp for purposes of swearing them in.
Yes, please.
Can you state your name and address? Come on up. The mic's going to pick you up. So can you state your name and address for the record?
Andrew Peterson, 3230 Water Street Road, Collegeville, Pennsylvania.
Petros Chakalis, business address? Or
whatever address you care to use.
601 Route 73 North, Marlton, New Jersey.
Sue Manchel, 104 Christian Street, Philadelphia, PA 19147.
And do all three of you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you.
I will also note for the record that the property owners are sitting in the back of the room there. I don't anticipate needing any testimony from them, but they are here as well. As Mr. Lank indicated, this is an application for a 145-foot-tall telecommunications tower located just adjacent to the John J. Williams Highway. It's in an area that, if you looked at some of the maps that were attached to our plans, there's not a lot of development. There is a Royal Farm, small commercial development, I guess, to the northeast of the site, and there's a lot of dense residential development towards the southern part of the area. The application itself seeks no variances, so it is just an application for a special use permit. It's been a few years since I've seen you all. I think you guys were getting bored with me. Mr. Rickard, you weren't on the board at the time. Back in 2011, I had several applications. This business is cyclical, so it's been about 3 years. I will give you the same warning I say to my wife. You'll probably be seeing me a little bit more this year as things move forward. But what happens is, for those of you who have heard these applications before from Mr. Rickard, We have a license from the FCC that obligates us to provide reliable cellular coverage to our subscribers. And over time, we become aware of gaps in coverage, or if you remember the old commercial, the dreaded "Can you hear me now?" effect. These issues have only gotten worse with the different types of technologies that are out there now. When I was before you just a few years ago, iPads were just coming on the scene. People were just figuring out that their handheld devices were really good for downloading videos and other things from the internet. There is a side effect to that as these technologies have advanced and these facilities and these devices allow you to do more things. It actually has the additional negative impact of further shrinking the coverage footprint than the existing towers give you. Each tower puts out a radius of coverage. When a lot of people are in one area on a device, on their devices, you'll notice that footprint actually shrinks. For any of you who've been to a big sporting event or to a concert, you try to get on your cell phone afterwards, you find it may also often be difficult because a lot of people are doing the same thing and they're sucking up the capacity. So that is an added problem that you have with these facilities. Obviously, we prefer not to build new towers, but we do have to do that on occasion because we need to fill the gap through different means, and this is one of those examples here. What I would like to do is have Mr. Peterson come up. He's our radio frequency engineer. And I'm going to run through the need for this particular facility and some of the different facets that were in the report that he gave. Mr. Peterson, you already stated your name for the record. It's accurate, is it not, that you are the RF engineer tasked with looking at this site and finding solutions for this area?
That's correct, yes.
With regard to the existing coverage in the area, if you could walk the board through how things are functioning at this point in time.
Sure. As many of you have seen before, what I have on the board is, first and foremost, a map. We have Route 24, John J. Williams Highway, kind of the prevailing roadway being shown. Other local roadways are also shown. Other typical map features, we have a scale and some creek features. In addition to the typical map features, we also have these black icons that dot the periphery of the exhibit. They represent the existing on-air Verizon wireless facilities. Overlaid then on top of all this information is some yellow shaded areas. Those represent areas where Verizon wireless subscribers today have adequate service. So not only is their coverage adequate for voice calls, but their coverage level there is sufficient for data sessions with adequate throughput, so they can download videos, send text messages, email, all these features that mobile devices are now capable of, and you know that not only applies to handheld smartphones, but laptops with air cards and your iPads, your Android devices, all these devices now that access the mobile network, and it's pretty certain that in the near future more devices will be, you know, added to the litany of devices that access the network, including your household appliances. So when you're running low on milk, your refrigerator will email your cell phone. You know, some of these Jetsons-like features that folks have been dreaming of for a while, that they are starting to become reality. And most consumer electronics devices, from you know the research that I've been doing, I stay on top of this stuff, will be equipped with you know LTE chipsets in the next 5 years or so. So you know we're getting to that point where manufacturers are starting to push that you know as a means to, of course, increase revenue, but also offer some nice features. So I guess the point is there that capacity is already being pushed to its limit, and there's really no end in sight for the demand for capacity.
And in fact, here there's actually an existing problem with one of the sites other than where we're looking to locate this facility. Is that correct?
Right. There is an existing capacity issue. This facility is really threefold, the purpose of it. It will provide contiguous coverage along 24 here where we have the coverage gap, and I should go back and kind of just mention that areas of white here indicate geographical areas where Verizon wireless subscribers don't have reliable service, so they don't have that ability to make, maintain, receive voice calls, initiate a data session with adequate throughput, on a regular basis. You may be able to carry a call through here sometimes, depending on traffic loading on the network, depending on weather conditions, et cetera. However, there's not that level of reliability that subscribers come to expect. So that is one of the main goals of the facility, to close that gap along 24. The other is to serve in-building, provide an in-building service level to all of the residential areas that are the relatively dense residential areas here that are mainly to the southeast of the facility, and also to offload the capacity exhaustion on the facility labeled Long Neck, which is due east. And that facility is looking at its trending towards capacity exhaustion by the end of this year. So not to say that by the end of this year that site will no longer function, but by the end of this year, subscribers will start to experience some data throughput slowdown as a result of capacity. And, you know, if past history is any indicator, that will more than likely start, you know, in the summertime when that portion of the county starts to pick up some more traffic. So Verizon Wireless is proactive about addressing capacity exhaustion sites. It takes, as many folks know, it takes some time for a site to go from a dot on the map to an actual functioning facility that's integrated in the network, so they have to stay ahead of it, and that's why we're here, you know, for those three reasons, including the capacity.
Can I ask you just what that, I can't see that far up there, but that, in other words, that's all right.
I can bring it up.
I just need, what's that heavy black line? Who is that, Coastal Highway, or is that?
Here, towards the bottom?
Yes.
That's just the 100 border.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the 100. I don't have okay. The label here.
Dagsboro 100.
The names of the hundreds.
Yeah, okay, just Dagsboro.
Right.
Right.
So, yeah, and I apologize. Okay, I'm not that familiar with the area to know the names of the hundreds.
Well, I do.
That's all the dark lines.
I do.
All right, good. Someone does. Right, thank you.
So
next time I'll label
them. That's what I thought it was, but I wasn't sure. So.
Right, yeah, that's all that is.
Okay.
If you could flip the map over, we have a second exhibit that obviously shows the impact of the addition of this facility to the network. If you could walk the board through what looks like a fairly obvious big green splotch on the area that was previously showing unavailable coverage.
Right. So now this exhibit is identical to the prior in every way, except for now we've added the additional coverage footprint of the proposed facility. So through computer modeling, we are now showing the anticipated coverage should the facility be constructed, antennas hung with a center line of 145 feet, and activated and integrated into the Verizon Wireless network. This is the anticipated coverage footprint. And as you can see now, we are providing that contiguous coverage along 24. There are, you know, as you can see, there are still some that, areas in kind of the low-lying spots nearby that are still shown as, you know, not covered. Those are not densely populated areas. They're low-lying. And also this will be tweaked to kind of fill in any gaps after post-construction. So this is kind of a baseline design of how things will come on the air.
And it's accurate that this, I'm trying to be cognizant of the board's 4-minute time limit that they put on us. It would be accurate, is it not, that this facility would provide both greater in-vehicle as well as in-building coverage in this area?
Yes, it will.
And it would be correct also that this would assist in the problems that you spoke about earlier with the Long Neck site, with the fact that it's going to be at capacity at some point later this year.
Yes, it will cure that issue as well.
And additionally, you submitted a report to the county with regard to the emissions output for these facilities. As the board is generally aware, as long as we demonstrate that we're meeting the FCC requirements for emissions outputs, it's not an issue that the board can take into consideration. However, Mr. Peterson did provide a report that shows we're actually 410 times below that limit. What I would like to do, since this doesn't appear to be a hearing with a lot of people with their pitchforks and barrels of hot fat that I sometimes encounter, just have them walk you through that, what goes into that report, so the board has an idea as we move, as you see others, of what that 410 times less than the federal standard represents.
So come to that conclusion of the 410 times less than the FCC standard, I use some almost unrealistic worst-case assumptions. I assume a passerby is exposed 24/7, 365, that they are in the main beam of the antenna for that time, an indefinite period of time. When I say main beam, these antennas act a lot like flashlights, where instead of the reflector behind the flashlight, there's an internal array that basically focuses the energy out towards the horizon in a relatively narrow beam, about 65 degrees wide, about 15 degrees high, and it focuses the majority of the energy off towards the horizon. So I'm assuming that all of that energy is pointed, if you will, at a passerby 24/7, 365. I also assume 100% ground reflection. So not only do I contemplate the direct wave that's incident from the antennas directly to the passerby, I also include a 100% ground reflected wave of equal strength, which doubles power, and that quadruples power density. So we've got a factor of 4 there. And even in this, worst case, unrealistic scenario, we still come to a final number that is in excess of 410 times less. I've also assumed some technologies that Verizon Wireless is not planning to deploy initially. They may deploy them down the road if need be. However, to be forward-looking here, I've included them in the analysis, so that will also exaggerate the power output and exposure levels.
Those are the only questions I have for Mr. Peterson, unless the board has any questions. Not that you can't bring him back.
Are there any questions from members of the board at this time?
You're saying 410 is what it winds up when you point everything right at that person and fire everything up?
Right. That assumes, 24/7, 365, that the facility is at its maximum output power, so it's fully loaded that entire time. It assumes that 100% ground reflection.
So you're not even close to the FCC.
Right. Even under that unrealistic worst case, you could still put 410 more providers on top of this tower, and then only then will you approach the FCC's safety levels.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Sure. Thanks.
I also have our civil engineer here, but my thought is, unless the board has any questions, I was not going to have him testify that the application meets all the required setbacks, the required screening, the required fencing. It's nestled against two rows of existing trees. It's not encroaching on any setbacks to the rear. It's only about 2,500 square feet compound, 50 by 50. The only thing that we're adding that's remotely impervious is a stone and gravel driveway that would connect to the facility itself. I do not have anything else I feel I need to add unless the board would like testimony. Any additional points?
I'm sorry. So you cut it short. You're saying that you've met all the requirements for 194.2?
Yes, we believe that we have. We submitted all the different reports, detail the criteria that's in there. I'm happy to go over any individual ones that board members have.
You've met those.
Mr. Peterson submitted 5 different reports to the county, plus the civil engineering drawings as well. I like to take advantage of those instances where there's not a lot of people here and leave it to the board's discretion to ask additional questions.
On that shed, is that a generator backup too in there?
What's
a generator backup in that shed too?
Yes, it does.
Pardon?
Yes, it does. It does have a generator backup inside the
unit.
Inside the shelter, yes.
Is that becoming a requirement now?
For Verizon Wireless, it is. Verizon Wireless does want every one of their sites to have emergency backup just in case of a power outage.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of requests for generators and a lot of those cell towers.
Yes. AT&T and the rest are following suit.
Have you always done that?
Or you Verizon just... Wireless has.
Always has. Yeah. Okay, no more questions.
Okay. Any further questions?
I guess the only other question would be, in your opinion, it will not have a substantially adverse effect on uses of neighboring adjacent properties?
Yes, and I think the absence of folks here voicing objections, which you've seen in some instances, you've had people voicing objections, I think is probably the strongest evidence that it's going to have no substantial, and again, we always emphasize the word substantial, adverse impact. I think the closest structure not owned by my client, the property owner or relative is over 560 feet away. There's two thick rows of trees that border the property to the north and to the east. I believe the directions are correct. It's in a fairly open area with a few isolated residential parcels and then the commercial development I referenced earlier, the Royal Farms and the like that are up there. So I don't believe there's any substantial adverse impact here.
All right, sir. Any further?
Thank you.
No further questions? Are there any persons here that are in favor of this application? That's two. Okay. Is there anyone here in opposition to this application? Chair, hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, the applicant has suggested that there would not be a substantial adverse effect to the uses of adjacent neighboring properties, and we didn't hear testimony to the contrary. So I'd make a motion we approve case number 11,368.
Can I have a second to that motion?
I'll second that, Mr. Chairman, and also he made the statement that he has met all the requirements for 194.2 of the ordinance.
Yep. Yeah, I have a motion by Mr. Mills and a second by Mr. Rickards that we approve case number 11,368. All those in favor of the motion? Mr. Workman?
Aye, for those reasons stated.
Again, Mr. Rickards?
Aye, for the reasons were stated.
Mr. Hudson?
Aye, for those reasons stated.
Mr. Mills?
Aye, for my reasons.
And I, Mr. Callaway, for the previous reason have been stated. So by a vote of 5-0, case number 11,368 is approved.